The date is July 21st, 1989, and we're watching When Harry Met Sally. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Jess to my Harry.
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
For years, I thought it was Jeff. And this go around looking into this movie, I'm like, oh, it's Jess with an S. I don't know why I've never heard the S's before in this.
I'm also just realizing that you said that, I was like, who's Jess?
They need to enunciate more in this movie. Well, this week we're looking back at July 1989 when the movies in theaters were Lethal Weapon 2, License to Kill, little James Bond for you, subject of episode 79, Weekend at Bernie's, subject of episode 4, UHF, and of course, our movie for today, When Harry Met Sally, which earned $93.2 million on a $16 million budget. So I guess we have a little James Bond and Lethal Weapon to watch to round out July 1989 on this show, right?
Yeah. Well, as always, there will be spoilers ahead, so if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like...
learning that orgasms can be faked.
There you go. That's a good one. Please hit pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
So I found three taglines for the poster of this movie. The first one, can men and women be friends, or does sex always get in the way?
Okay, sure. Yeah. That's the pitch.
Yeah, I will warn you ahead of time, that's not the only one that just rips a line right from the movie. So, number two, can friends sleep together and still love each other in the morning?
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And number three, I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible. Yeah.
I mean, that one gives it a, that's the actual spoiler.
Yeah.
I don't really know how I feel about any of those. Like, weirdly, I didn't realize how much of this movie is like, that is the premise. Like, I've always just kind of watched it, I guess, with a pure heart. But like it really is just about like, can men and women be friends?
No hating Colin watching When Harry Met Sally.
But then the more I read about it, the more I was like, oh yeah, like that is actually the genesis of this movie, is just that question.
Yeah. 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 Can you have a girl who is a friend? Yeah.
I would say if they were gonna use that last one as a tagline, it should have just been what's the line?
I came here tonight because when you realize you want to spend the rest of your life with somebody, you want the rest of your life to start as soon as possible.
Yeah, they should just cut out the I came here tonight. The tagline is just when you realize you want to spend your life with someone, you want to start, you want whatever, you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, well, even just putting some spin on the when you want your life to start as soon as possible or something. But I don't know. But there's so much movie that takes place before the life begins. Yeah. I don't know. Well, let's figure this out with a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. In 1977, after graduating from the University of Chicago, Harry Burns and Sally Albright decide to ride share to New York City, where Sally is attending journalism school and Harry has a job waiting. During the drive, Harry and Sally discuss their differing ideas about relationships. Sally disagrees with Harry's assertion that men and women cannot be friends, as the sex part gets in the way. They stop at a diner, and when Harry tells Sally she is very attractive, she angrily accuses him of making a pass. They part company in New York, never intending to see each other again. 5 years later, in 1982, Harry and Sally find themselves on the same flight. Sally's dating Harry's neighbor, and Harry is engaged to Helen, which surprises Sally as it seems uncharacteristically optimistic of him. Harry suggests they become friends, forcing him to qualify his previous position about the impossibility of male-female friendships. They separate, concluding, again, that they will not be friends. 5 years later, in 1987, Harry and Sally run into each other at a bookstore. They have coffee and talk about their previous relationships. Sally and Joe have broken up, and Helen has left Harry for another man. They agree to pursue friendship and have late-night phone conversations, go to the diner, and spend time together discussing their love lives. During a New Year's party, Harry and Sally... You can tell that this was just written as I watched. During a New Year's party, yeah. Harry and Sally find themselves growing attracted to each other and share an awkward midnight kiss. They remain friends and set each other up with their respective best friends, Marie and Jess. When the four go out, neither Marie or Jess is attracted to Harry. Instead, Harry or Sally, but instead they fall for each other and soon after get engaged. After Sally finds out her ex, Joe, is getting married, she turns to Harry for comfort. They end up having sex. Harry leaves the next morning feeling awkward and filled with regret. Their friendship cools until they have a heated argument at Jess and Marie's wedding reception. Harry attempts to mend their relationship, but Sally is not having it. Until, at a 1988 New Year's Eve party with Jess and Marie, Sally misses Harry. Meanwhile, Harry walks around the city missing Sally. As Sally is about to leave the party, Harry appears and declares his love for her. The line that we already mentioned. He claims he is only there because he is lonely, but he lists the many reasons he loves her. And then, cut to the end, Harry and Sally marry 3 months later, exactly 12 years and 3 months after their first meeting, showing that love, while unexpected, always prevails.
There we go. Yeah. That cleared it right up.
There we go.
It's a lot of movie. I forgot how much goes on in this movie. Yet, so little does. Like, it's weird. Like, there's, a lot of locales. Mm-hmm. I mean, we'll get there. But when Harry met Sally, I mean, it's one of the OGs. Here we are, Maguary. We're celebrating the month of love. We just got past Valentine's Day, but here we are with probably the most romantic of romantic comedies. I don't know. Maybe it is. Who knows? It's definitely a departure from what we did last week, that's for sure. Yeah. As far as, how many characters are at least involved in knowing that this love is taking place. But yeah, this is one of those ones that I just remember seeing it because everyone has to see this movie, and I don't have a huge history with this movie. That's why I keep rambling into other topics. I've always liked it. It's always been there, and that's when Harry met Sally. I don't have any big first viewing of Harry when Harry met Sally.
Yeah.
Colin, what about you? I mean, you mentioned it last week talking about your Hallmark movies and everything like that. But When Harry Met Sally, though, has a special place in your heart, I believe.
Yeah, for me, like, similar to you, this movie, I don't know. I think I've mentioned it on the show before, but I had, like, not like I wasn't a sheltered kid, I wouldn't say, but like I just didn't have access to a lot of movies, and so I was pretty like limited in the movies I watched, and also like there wasn't like streaming. You didn't have a lot of ability to like go back and watch things from the past, and also like as a teenager, I wasn't about to go back and watch like a rom-com from the 1980s. But
yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
But like in my early 20s, I set about kind of like watching all these like classic movies. Like that's when I watched Forrest Gump for the first time. I remember I watched the Rocky series. I watched, a whole bunch of other movies that were kind of, these touchstone pictures. Ones that like that are like in the zeitgeist of pop culture and that kind of thing. And yeah, uh-huh. Harry Met Sally was one of them. I'm pretty sure I bought it like at HMV for like, cause I was real big into like the 2 for $10 and like the 2 for $20 deals.
Yeah,
and
those
all
were
that.
Fun shelves. Those were fun shelves. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was one of those.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I love this movie from the first time I watched it, and it's probably like a yearly watch for me. Like it's just one of those movies. It's, I don't know. It's like, to me, When Harry Met Sally is kind of like what Seinfeld is for me in TV or The Office. Like, it's just comfortable.
Yeah.
It's just such a, like, it's just like a movie that I'm like, ah, I can't wait to go back to you.
Well, here we go. Let's jump into When Harry Met Sally, directed by Rob Reiner. We're seeing him in back-to-back weeks. I mean, he was Tom Hanks' sidekick last week. Produced by Rob Reiner and Andrew Scheinman, and written by Nora Ephron for back-to-back weeks as well. So, yeah, open this movie with the jazzy opening. Does Billy Crystal have it in his contract that he's got to have, like, this nice little jazzy upbeat stuff with his movies? Because, I mean, Monsters, Inc.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. It is rare. It is also, yeah, it was funny watching this movie this time around because I have a toddler now and she loves Monsters, Inc. And it was so hard for, like, the times when I would turn away from the screen or, like, be, like if I was looking at something on my phone and hearing him talk, to be like... It's Mike. It's Mike Wazowski. I just know him more.
Oh, yeah.
It's also, I also find, like, Billy Crystal really, it's weird watching him in this movie every time I watch it because I'm just so used to, he's one of those guys who's, like, just forever old to me. But in this movie, he's, like, undeniably young.
Well, the reason why, I think, is because your first exposure to him was probably The Princess Bride.
Yeah, I think so.
When he was made up to be older than he is now. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in this movie, there's a 13-year age difference between him and Meg Ryan.
I was wondering about that because I was just like, she has to be fairly young. But he's like,
he's 40. She's 27.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And it's like, but I was watching this movie thinking he looked so young. I mean, he's playing college and maybe he's a little bit too old to play college, but they've put enough makeup on him. They've brought his
good
age
wig
down. Yeah.
Put his hair good.
Yeah. So I mean, I bought it, but for what it was, but it's 40 playing college. Okay, well, go Billy Crystal, I guess. Mm-hmm. You look marvelous. Well, let's talk about this cast. You know, we've already mentioned our first two leads here.
Yes, sir. We got the man Billy Crystal is Harry Burns.
Now you want the alternate castings on this one?
Well, I did, the only one I know is I did read that Tom Hanks was an alternate casting, and I thought that would have been so interesting if him and Meg Ryan could have got the hat trick.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, they do. I mean, we got Joe versus the Volcano. How quickly you forget about Joe versus the Volcano. Yeah. He dates three Meg Ryans in that one. He got the hat trick in that movie alone. But see, the funny thing is, now I've read two different stories. One is that Tom Hanks turned it down because it was, quote, too lightweight, which I find funny considering what we watched last week. But the other one is apparently Rita Wilson is quoted as saying that, oh, he turned it down because he was going through a divorce at the time. So, you know, he wasn't in the frame of mind for it, blah, blah, blah. So I don't know which one to believe. I like to think the too lightweight one, just because that one's funnier.
Yeah.
But we also had Michael Keaton, Albert Brooks, Bill Murray, Jeff Bridges, and Harrison Ford as the alternate castings. There's no one else but Billy Crystal for this role.
I can imagine Michael Keaton, but I could see Michael Keaton in the role, but, like, Billy Crystal, I think, is still the guy.
Well, see, and Albert Brooks has a little bit of a Billy Crystal-esque quality to him. I mean, to the point that they've both been in Pixar movies, because he is, of course, Nemo's father, is Albert Brooks, so... Mm. But they have a similar look, yeah.
All right, we have our Lady of the Month, Meg Ryan, as Sally Albright. Any alternate castings?
Yeah,
for that?
We got that one. Susan Day. I'm not sure who she is. Elizabeth Perkins, Elizabeth McGovern, and Molly Ringwald.
Hmm. Yeah, I can't imagine any of those.
Right? Yeah. Even though I only know a couple of them. But yeah, no.
We have Carrie Fisher as Marie.
Love
It's
Carrie
always
Fisher.
weird to see Carrie Fisher. Like
I
I
know.
like forget that she did other movies other than Star
Right?
Wars.
Yeah, it's like when you see Christopher Reeve in a movie, it's like, oh yeah, shit. Right, he had a career other than just Superman.
I was thinking though that Carrie Fisher's character in this movie is almost the exact same as her character in Drop Dead Fred. Like they could
Yeah.
be the same person. Like they're both dating. Well, at the beginning she is, but like dating like married guys and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And
Yeah. And at some point, we're probably going to end up watching The Burbs on this show, which she is also in. And at that point, it's like it's the same character, but she's finally settled down. You know? It's like the Marie that she becomes at the end of this movie when she
yeah.
and Jess are finally really coupled up. Yeah.
Does Carrie Fisher have like, is she like a lead in that movie? Or is she just like, after Star Wars, is she kind of just like a side?
No,
I mean, I
yeah,
guess she's.
The Burbs, she's Tom Hanks' wife,
Okay.
and the story is more focused on Tom Hanks and his buddies in the neighborhood. So yeah,
Yes.
she's sixth on the call sheet, you know?
Sometimes feel like Carrie Fisher was an unfortunate casualty of like her like generation of female actors, I guess, like where they're just kind of relegated to spinsters or like hopelessly romantic like ingenues.
Yeah. But I don't think Carrie Fisher was as much about the acting because she was also a writer. So
Yeah.
I don't think she really, cared as much about the acting.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, next we have Bruno Kirby as Jess.
Yeah, he's with Billy Crystal in City Slickers.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stephen Ford is Joe. Lisa Jane Persky is Alice. Is Alice the roommate?
I don't even remember which one is which, right? Like it gets to the point that next you have Michelle Nicastro as Amanda, and then it's like stewardess, man on aisle, judge. Like, you
No,
know.
I'm on Wikipedia.
Oh,
I have
okay.
Michelle Nicastro as Amanda Reese, then Kevin Rooney as Ira.
As
In his one
Oh,
tiny
there we
little
go.
scene, he really does a good job at like ramping up the awkward.
Which one is Ira?
He's the one who's with Helen when they meet in the bookstore, like her new guy.
Oh, okay.
And you're just kind of like, you can see it on his face. It's like that whole scene makes no sense, like why you would do that. Like in what world are you seeing your ex-wife or husband in a bookstore from like a long ways away and making that like walk to be
Yeah.
like maybe just like wave, but
Maybe yeah,
like
what's up,
yeah,
Nadia? I'll
we don't need to we don't need to like
throw some deuces your way. Yeah, we're good. Yeah, I recognize that we're in vicinity of each other. Yeah, no, that's true. Yeah, but hey, whatever. To each their own, I guess.
And then we have Harley Kozak as Helen Hilson, and then Estelle Reiner as female customer. I'm assuming that's the I'll have what she's having lady.
Yes, which is Rob Reiner's mother. He has his own mother in this movie.
I really thought that Harley Kozak was Helen Hunt when she showed up on this movie.
Oh yeah. I could see that. Yeah, it's funny when I was looking for stories and trivia and things like that for the movie. So many of the stories centered around I'll have what she's having. Like the fact that that's Rob Reiner's mother, and the fact that Rob Reiner performed himself what he gave Meg Ryan a line reading of the orgasm, basically. He performed it for in front of his mother and everything so that they could see what they were in for. And so I can't imagine what that would look like with Rob Reiner. But yeah, there's just so many things about that. The I'll have what she's having was actually a line suggestion from Billy Crystal.
Oh
The scene was originally written to just talk about how women fake orgasms, and it was I believe Rob Reiner who said that, well, no, she should act it out instead, and Nora Ephron liked that idea more. Or maybe it was Meg Ryan even that said that.
yeah.
that she was, yeah, acting it out. Like, it's just so much of the trivia involved that, and then there was, like, not much else to be said about this movie. I mean,
that is not much else of interest. That is, like, the game changer of the movie. I think weirdly, like, this movie is a completely different movie without that scene somehow.
It's very true. Yeah, I think so. And it's the fact that when you put the 1989 lens on it and think, oh shit, that was probably edgy.
Yeah,
it's 1989.
I was thinking it was similar to how, like, last week we talked about the conversation that Meg Ryan's character has with her mom about, like sleeping with her dad and
sex before marriage and all that. Yeah,
when you think about this movie in the 1989 context, like, the idea of a man and a woman even, like, discussing orgasms in an open forum, let alone, like, faking one, and it was I imagine that would be very edgy and progressive.
Well, and the fact that I know so much, this is going to sound like a humble brag, about women faking orgasms,
yeah,
right? But I don't mean it in that way even. I just even mean the amount of times I've seen it in a comedy or in stand-up or anything like that. It's common knowledge. In 1989, is this the thing that, like, announced it to the world? Like, it makes me wonder. Like, It seems like it was a big deal. I don't know.
Yeah, I would have to imagine it was. Just because of, like, the staying power of it, and the fact, like, even you're saying, with all the, like, that's what all the trivia centers around. Like, clearly people thought it was a big deal.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Now, I joked about it earlier, but it's true that one thing that I like more about this movie compared to Sleepless in Seattle already off the bat is that the two lead characters have interaction throughout the movie. This is the traditional will they, won't they, you know, like, oh, she hates him, but she loves him. Like, this has more of the romantic comedy feel than stalker lady following guy and his son. You know, like, so I definitely like the device as well of the old couples telling their stories.
I
read that they are, like, real stories performed by actors, but they are real stories.
Oh, okay. I wasn't sure, like, I knew obviously, like, the last one is them, so I knew that. But I wasn't sure if they got, like, if they were real couples or not. Because I heard that, or I read, I think, that Nora Ephron had, like, started, I don't know, like, interviewing people, like, in her, like, workplace or something when she was bored. And that's how it kind of started with those stories. But I wasn't sure if she just, like, took videos she had or if they just did it. But I also think it's a little jarring, like, at first, but I kind of like that they do it with, like, no explanation. It's just there. Like, it's not like there's no setup of, like, oh, hey, we're doing, like, this document. Like, they just intersperse them with, like, just because we wanted to. Like, they're just there. They don't really have anything to do with, like, what's happening in the actual movie. It's just, you know, we just wanted to throw these in.
Yeah, instead of doing the George Lucas scream wipe transitions, it's a little scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's this little interstitial in between, you know, moments. Like, because they always happen before the date changes drastically, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
It's always followed by a 5 years later or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I think in previous watches, I've looked more to those scenes as kind of what, for lack of a better, like, the moral of the story is. Like, watching it now after reading all, like, I get, like, the premise is kind of based around, like, can men and women be friends? But I used to think of it more as just, like, people can fall in love in, like, every which way. Or,
different,
like,
kinds of relationships. Yeah, because, like, there's the one couple that says, we were an arranged marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And I snuck in to see her before the wedding. That whole story.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that's not friends.
Yeah. So, yeah, I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. One thing I found interesting watching the credits, Barry Levinson is the director of photography on this. And I thought, oh, isn't he only a director? Like, isn't that the guy that directed Men in Black?
Oh, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Well, then that piece of trivia is just for me, I guess. Well, it's not even trivia, but...
Let's do a quick Google search.
It's an observation.
Men in Black. Barry Sonnenfeld.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm an idiot. So we open this movie in 1977, University of Chicago, where we get Billy Crystal making out with some random girl that we never hear from again. Like, I like small details like that, that this isn't even a lifelong friend of hers. Like, you know, when they end up meeting up 5 years later, she can't even remember the name of this friend.
Yeah.
This college friend that she was going to be friends with forever.
Yeah, like this type of situation would just never happen nowadays. Yeah. Where you could just be like, oh, hey, my boyfriend is also going to New York. You guys should split a ride. Like, this is the first time you're meeting and you're going to drive across the country.
Not a great idea these days. No, I don't think so. Yeah. Yeah. And so then it's the titular When Harry Met Sally right here. They meet, the end. Boom. Credits, right? Short movie.
I didn't know
the title's misleading, you know? It's
yeah, because it's like the actual like end to the dot dot dots is that when Harry met Sally, they didn't like each other. That's the end.
Yeah.
And when Harry met Sally,
and then they did, and then
when Harry met Sally, he spit grapes all over her window.
Right? Yeah. You'd think there would be a better way to at least test for that. I don't know. Yeah, that's pretty inconsiderate.
I know. I didn't understand. Like, I don't know. You didn't put the window down. Are you like a bird? It was just so clear. You just thought it was down.
That's right. That's exactly what it was. You're lucky it wasn't a patio door.
But also, that would be so obnoxious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we first find out what his quirk is, and that's that he likes to flip to the last page of the book because he doesn't, you know, just in case he dies before he gets a chance to read the whole book. That's his quirk. He's got a dark side, and her quirk is that she orders like a fucking lunatic. Now, I read, though, that, like, that's based on Nora Ephron. Apparently, that's how she orders food.
All
and
right.
It's like, ooh, that's
I could not. That whole pie scene, like.
Yeah. If you don't have this, then I don't want the pie or whatever. Like, it's even when I was doing Weight Watchers and really watching my shit, you know, the hardest I get would be like, you know, dressing on the side, or can you tear out the middle of that bun, Subway? You know, like that was the most obnoxious I got, but boy, oh boy, yeah. She's a lot.
Yeah. That whole thing reminds me about like why I hate going to Starbucks and like why I usually hate people who do go to Starbucks.
Yeah.
because they can
and
never.
If you have to order for multiple people, it's like, what the fuck am I even ordering?
Like, I can't stand it. If I go to Starbucks with my wife, I I usually just refuse because it's just
yeah, me too.
I will not accept an order that's more than like one stipulation. So you can tell me black coffee with like cream and milk, and that's it. But if it's gonna be like, I want a extra hot white latte, no foam, like.
Half
sweetener, like, blah blah. I'm like, go get it yourself. Mm-hmm. It's not for me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. No, the longest Starbucks order I can remember, you know, is when you use fancy words like Frappuccino.
Yeah.
That's the longest that I will remember for you, you know. Yeah. But yeah, no half calf motherfucker. Ah. Yeah. See, they could see the future. I mean, this was a 1977 picky chick, right? Fast forward 40 years into the future, and all of a sudden, uh-oh, Starbucks is around, and that's when we run into lunatic orders everywhere you go.
I just looked up, like, the distance from Chicago to New York. That's like a 12-hour drive. Did they just, do you think they just drove it in one shot? Like they, I was curious, like they never show them like stop somewhere to like stay the night. And when they go to the diner, it's at night, but you never see
But
anybody sleeping.
do they drive through the night though? Is there any ever any driving at night that we see? I don't think
I
so,
don't think
no.
so, no.
So maybe they we just the assumption is after they leave the diner, they drive through the night and she's dropping him off in the morning.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess we're not supposed to think about it, but yeah, 12 hours, I guess that is a pretty good haul. The entrance into the diner, I mean, is another good classic where she's I've had plenty of good sex as she's coming into the diner. Yeah.
Yeah, all the poor Sheldons out there.
Just missing the record scratch. But yeah, we get our revelation for the movie that men and women we get our thesis statement for the movie dropped to us after towards the end of this first exchange with them is that men and women can't be friends because sex gets in the way. And drop them off in New York, they shake hands, end of movie, boom, right? That's it. Harry met Sally, they're enemies.
Do you like do you think like I was trying to just figure out if I actually do you think her she overreacted to him telling her she was attractive?
Maybe. I think so. I mean, the way that he was putting, I don't think he was doing it as a come on.
No, I agree. Like I think he like I think Harry is just a very like forthright, objective person.
Yeah, and he's always good to go. I mean, I think that's also part of it is it's like he's gonna toss it out there, and if something happens, he's not gonna say no. But yeah, no, I think she had a bit of an overreaction, but I think that's also to show what a stick in the mud she is.
Yeah.
Which is what makes the orgasm scene such a revelation. She's come out of her shell. So 5 years later, we see Meg Ryan making out with some random guy. And Harry happens to walk by and recognizes the guy. I like the serendipity of their chance encounters. Like it is the way that these play out as like little vignettes of their life. It's fun. I do like the structure of the movie very much, I will say.
Yeah, I agree.
Now, do you think he actually doesn't recognize her?
No, I think he did.
Yeah.
I just think, yeah, I don't know why I think like there's something about the way the camera goes to his face that makes me think like he's like it's like he recognized her, but he thinks she doesn't recognize him, maybe is what's
Okay.
happening.
Yeah. I mean, it is one of those things that I wonder about whether it does actually take him all the way until they get on the plane for it to dawn on him who she actually is.
Yeah, like it kind of seemed that, or maybe it was something to do with like the way they left things. Like maybe he was worried that she would like embarrass him in front of his friend or something. But or like maybe he didn't want he if he didn't want her to, if she didn't recognize him immediately, he didn't want to bring it up because he didn't want her to like bring that up that he.
There was just this whole standoff going on that's all
Yeah,
subtext.
there's definitely something there that makes me think like that there was recognition. Because like he also when they get on the plane, he's like immediately like Sally Albright.
Well,
All
yes, but that's because she orders like a drink in a super complicated manner. So, I mean, that would definitely jog your memory where it's like, oh, right, I remember this. So maybe it is legit. I don't know. I mean, I like both reads on it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I can take it either way. That's what she said. So they get their airplane ride, and then like that's the end of that scene. And then we get 5 years later, and Sally's out for lunch with Marie and Alice. So this is where we get introduced to Carrie Fisher. I was excited to see Carrie Fisher. I forgot Carrie Fisher was in this one.
I did too.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. She is like one of those people who's always nice. She's a very good character actor.
Yeah.
I think kind of underrated in that regard.
She's a good chum.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's plucky.
Yeah.
So and then we I love the football scene though, where he is telling the devastating story of his wife leaving him as they're doing the wave. The idea of that is just so hilarious to me that they actually maintain the wave while it's going on. I love that.
To me, that like, yeah. I get like to go back. That is a very Seinfeldian.
It is. I feel like
Jerry and who's the other guy in Seinfeld? Why am I blanking on George? His name right now? Well, no, like the writer.
Oh, Larry David.
Larry David. Yeah. Like I feel like they have whatever this like sensibility is of a writer. There's this, but yeah, it's very Jerry and George, where it's just like we keep talking as we're also like engaging with it. Even later on when they're doing that weird speed walk through Central Park, like it's kind of a similar thing where they're having this like really like deep conversation while they're like
doing this something weirdly absolutely timed insane. Hip yeah.
It's race walking.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's completely straight, like this is just normal. I think part of that is the Rob Reiner of it all though.
Yeah.
I even just watching him last week in Sleepless in Seattle to see how he delivers lines. Mm-hmm. Like you could see him hanging around with Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. Like they just all talk the same in a way. You know, or
there's that like, I don't mean this. I hope it's not offensive, but it's just that like
that Jewish New York, yeah,
aesthetic.
Yeah. So because everyone is broken up, you know, they end up bumping into each other at the bookstore, and they have dinner and together. And they decide that they're going to be friends. They're talking about their failures, and they bond over it. But they're, and then we start getting into the split screen phone calls. The one where it's all four of them was 61 takes.
Oh, wow.
Because they performed it live, right? Like they performed it. They were all actually on the phone with each other, four different sets on the soundstage.
Oh, wow.
And I guess the hardest thing to actually get right was at the end was the hanging up, the slam, 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 slam. There was a certain pattern that they wanted, and they got it on take 57, and then Bruno Kirby fucked up the last line of the scene, so they had to do it all again, because there's no take, or no cuts, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's 61 cool. times they had to do that scene.
Yeah.
Imagine the victory lap you take after that fucking 61 times. It's like, fuck! That would feel like magic.
There's probably just like stillness, like a little until you hear that. But
yeah, was that it? Was that it?
Yeah,
got it. Oh, the lens cap was on, guys.
I find it weird, like in the 1980s, that people would just like turn on Casablanca for like a watch.
Yeah.
Like I literally don't know. I don't know a single person, and maybe if I do, it's probably you. But I don't know a single person who's watched Casablanca all the way through.
Yeah, well, that's true. I mean, yeah, he's an expert at watching Casablanca and eating something. What's he eating? Let's talk about it in the sponsorship corner. Threw in a very clumsy segue there. So always on the lookout for product placements and movies. This week, When Harry Met Sally is brought to you by The Sharper Image, Evian Water, Coca-Cola, M&M's, Nike, Malamars. That's what he's eating. I've never had a Malamar. I don't even know what a Malamar is. I'm assuming it has marshmallow in it, though, right? It just sounds like a marshmallowy treat. Malamar.
Is it like a marshmallow chocolate bar?
I think so. I think it's a cookie though. Okay. I'm not sure. Yeah. Moishis, whatever that is. Visa, United Airlines, ABC, the New York Giants and Yankees, and the possibly fictional Genstar and Sabret Frankenfurters. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. I mean, really, the fifth main character in this movie is New York City.
Yeah, that's it. That's true.
They definitely do show their love for New York in this movie.
I mean, compared to Sleepless in Seattle, I feel like you could go to New York and be like, right? Oh yeah, this is where Harriet.
Yeah, take some selfies that actually are meaningful to the history of this movie. Yeah, that's for sure. No, I definitely did notice that, and some great stuff or like great imagery going on. Like, I'm wondering how long they actually spent filming this, because I mean they've got a few different seasons going on in this movie.
Like, yeah, it goes through Christmas, and it's like there's like at least two Christmases for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, a New Year's. There's that one scene where they're walking through the park and the leaves are all, you know, autumn-y.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like the cover of my DVD, but they're having like a really filthy discussion at that time. I forget exactly what they're talking about in that scene. But yeah, it's just funny that that's like the lovely picture that they put on the cover. It's, the leaves are pretty. The leaves are pretty. Ever made a woman meow, Colin? That's such a random thing. I made her meow. I wonder if that was an improvised line from Billy Crystal.
Yeah, no. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked to find out it was. I can't say, unfortunately, that I've ever made a woman meow, but I'll keep trying. I'll give it my best shot.
Yeah. You'll give it your best? Yeah, okay, cool. Me too, me too. I mean, I'm in the no meow club also. So, now, we get to the diner scene, the big scene. I mean, I'm super impressed with how the special effects here hold up, right?
Special effect.
Yeah, there's no way to actually fake an orgasm, right? Like, this is some sort of computer magic, right?
Yeah, someone went back. Yeah? Someone went forward to the future and brought AI technology back.
Yeah, okay, that's what it is. That's what I thought. Yeah, because those are all real. Okay, so
I wonder how often Meg Ryan like how much practice she put into that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I'm just imagining, like, what if she was just at home, like, just, like, where do I want to hit the, like, how much time do I want to take in the preamble?
I'm rehearsing in here! I'm rehearsing!
I don't know if she was dating anyone at the time. Maybe she just wanted to, like, see.
this might have still also been Dennis Quaid time. I believe Dennis Quaid might have lasted from this time all the way up until Sleepless in Seattle time. I'm not sure, though. Yeah.
Like, one of my favorite things about that scene is and I imagine, like, similar to the four-way phone call, it would have taken a lot of time to be, like, they just like how everybody like slowly tunes in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like everybody turns all at once. It's like slowly all the other people in the diner like start like tuning in like one by one.
Oh yeah, the guy behind her realizes it immediately.
That scene is so good.
It is. Yeah. It's still one of the best ones. But then we get to New Year's and things get awkward when they have a New Year's kiss. Oh. I mean, it is, at least there's a will they, won't they. Right? Like, yeah.
This one has all the good beats. We have the kiss. And then when they finally have sex, you know, Harry takes it wrong. And we have the real, like, divide.
Yeah.
Like, now it seems like there's no hope. And then
We have the friends trying to set their destined love up with someone else. Yeah, both of them try to do that. I like the double date scene where Marie and Jess end up together.
Yeah. One of the things I actually really like about this movie, and there's like a TV show called, it's called like Love Life. It's like an anthology series, but by season, I guess, not by episode, but it's like the first one, it has like Anna Kendrick, and it's kind of like a similar story about like a similar kind of take on like slow burn love and like more realistic. But it's like,
yeah,
one of the things that I think makes the When Harry Met Sally story so grounded is the fact that like they're together for so often in this movie while they're like dating other people and seeing the person who they at first like not even wanting to be with each other. But then like, I love the scenes when they're kind of like after the kiss, when they're like, the attraction is there, but they're still dating other people, and they're like, now they're having to like see the person date someone else. And
yeah, they're Robin and Ted.
Another level to it. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This is the original How I Met Your Mother, just without the kids. But there's two people sitting on a couch telling a story at the end, you know?
Yeah, I also just think in contrast to like Sleepless in Seattle, which is just the most like bonkers, like unrealistic love story I've ever seen. I think the thing that I love about When Harry Met Sally is like, it's so like, this is how it works or could work. Like, well, it's entirely plausible.
Yeah. And the way that it is structured and the way that the time passes, you're seeing all these people move on with their lives. I mean, we move on to the housewarming party for Jess and Marie, because now they're moving in together. And so we get to, they show the right amount of their lives at the right times. I guess. I don't know. I don't know what else to say other than like, yeah, it's just, it's well made. It's a good story. Yeah. And also, so much is told just with the looks between them. That's the other thing is like, I'm very impressed with how much or how well both Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan do in this movie with just telling a lot of story with just looks. Like, you can see that attraction between them and everything.
Yeah, I really like that scene. I think it's like after Jess and Marie get engaged. No, it's not the news, but they're at like some party and they've both brought like other people. And it's like, you know, like,
oh, it's like Pictionary night.
Yeah, the Pictionary. Yeah. And Harry sees her make out with her guy. And then, you know, and then they cut to him like with the longing look. And then you think like, oh, like she's moved on. But then you see Harry like with his girl. And then you get to see her like, oh, she does like him. Like, I love those little moments.
Yeah, that's the perfect example of what I was just saying. Yeah, exactly. See, I tee you up, you knock it out. I
Pictionary, the baby talk. Pictionary is the worst. I hate Pictionary, actually.
Yeah.
It's one of my least favorite party games because it's just like, it's annoying in a not fun way.
Because, and they highlight it in this, but you always get the one person that just repeats the same thing over and over again. No,
it doesn't switch it up.
No, it wasn't that the first time. Why would it be the 50th time?
Yeah.
I love how this movie ends up having a montage at one point, which shows us the moments that he realizes that he was in love with her. Is that a trait of your average romantic comedy, is to show a few flashbacks of their happy moments together?
No.
No?
I would say not. But I think it works well in this. I think it works well in this movie to bring everything to a head.
Yeah.
Just where they're at. I think normally I might like, that might be kind of like cheesy, but for whatever reason in this movie, I think it works good.
But one thing that I know they do have in just about every one of these movies, I mean, I've got to be right on this one, is that we've got some sappy song playing. In this case, it had to be You. And he goes from strolling to jogging to running because he realizes that he needs to confess his love and have his big kiss moment and everything like that. So there's got to be a run of one of the protagonists in every one of these movies, right?
I mean, we just saw it in like the last one. This is the same.
That's
as
true.
The end,
that's
except,
true.
Except like she's there when he shows up.
Yeah.
But it almost, and this is where I think like Sleepless in Seattle drops the ball and Harry Met Sally like scores the touchdown. Yeah. Like, because she's about to leave and you think they needed to meet there.
Yeah.
Just like I said last week in Sleepless in Seattle, it needed to be like an overwhelming realization. You meet and you, I didn't like the psycho, the fake out. I don't know.
Yeah.
Didn't like it.
But it helps when both characters know the other exists. So
yes, that is true as well.
I guess the original ending of this movie though was supposed to be that they don't end up together.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
And I can't imagine it.
No. Yeah. That's just not right. But he confesses his love to her in the tagline that we've already heard a couple of times. And, you know, he wants to spend the rest of his life with her. So, and then they end up telling the story on the couch at the end. Yeah. In 2022, this movie was selected for preservation in the National Film Registry by the Library of Congress, deeming it culturally, historically, or aesthetically significant. I can't believe it took till 2022.
Yeah, I was going to say, is it
33
like,
years? Like,
is it like, you know how like with the NHL Hall of Fame or whatever, you have to be like retired for a certain amount of years before for the preservation? Is it like it needs to be 30 years? Because I mean, in fairness, like if you were to think about it, like, especially right now, there's a lot of 30-year-old movies that like could have been. But now people would look back on like a little bit sourly because, you know, times have changed and tastes have changed and what's acceptable or not acceptable has changed and that kind of stuff. So luckily, but Harry Met Sally, you know, it's still good.
Well, let me give you a comparison. The 2001 movie Memento was placed into the same Library of Congress film registry in 2017. So it only took 16 years for that movie to get in there.
Yeah, that's a little ridiculous.
So now when Harry Met Sally is slacking, I only know that fact because that fact came up in my Memento episode that I've recorded with Aaron that hasn't come out yet. So,
like, I would say that when Harry Met Sally should have been, you know, I think you got to give a movie a decade to breathe and see if it's still something.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
But like, yeah, like 10 years. And if people, I mean, if it's still like the top of the top, like I think you got to throw it in there.
So for the length of time that Will Smith is banned from the Oscars is the amount of time that you need to give it to breathe.
Mm-hmm. Minimum.
Minimum.
But I would say 30 years for him when Harry Met Sally is a bit too much. Like, like the 20-year mark is probably like acceptable. Like, because, you know, things could catch on and whatever, but...
Yeah. Well, at least it's in there now.
Yeah.
Well, there we go. I think that's when Harry Met Sally. So now, Colin, on IMDb, it scored 7.7 out of 10, has a Metascore of 76. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 91% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 89%. But, Colin, those are just numbers. Like, realizing that... She's the one for you. And if you want your life to begin, you want it to start as soon as possible, hit us with some reviews. I don't know where that went. That just...
We got there. All right. Alan Levick says 4 out of 5 stars. 30 years on and this film still resonates. Is so right about how men and women relate. Aside of containing one of cinema's iconic scenes, the fake orgasm, and probably the funniest line ever uttered to end that scene, anyone can say, "I'll have what she's having" in response to a situation. Everyone recognizes the sentiment. Ideas put forward by the film are with us to debate as vigorously today. High maintenance, men and women can never really just be friends because sex gets in the way, you make it impossible to hate you, and so on, permeate the simple story, which he puts in brackets, two people fall in love, and in turn... and turn it into a mini thesis on relationships, made funny and sharp by expertly written one-liners, which Billy Crystal has made a deserved career from. He collaborated on the script with Reiner and Efron, and has become a classic because you invest in the characters played so charmingly by the leads. They, in fact, irritate you a lot of the time because you recognize yourself and friends in them, and it hurts. But in a reassuring way, quote-unquote, you're just human. It is no coincidence, I think, that Casablanca features in the narrative because that is the ultimate movie magic. It shouldn't work, but it does, and you never tire of letting it wash over you. Brilliant.
So, this movie is inspired by Casablanca, and Sleepless in Seattle was inspired by An Affair to Remember. So, Casablanca is regarded as a much more prestigious movie, I believe, than An Affair to Remember. Or, you know, like, it's kind of like, you know, I can see that the inspirations for both of these movies are kind of the same quality, you know? One's better than the other one.
Yeah.
Casablanca is better.
It's important to choose your source material well.
Yeah, that's right.
Curly Girl gives it 5 out of 5 stars, quite possibly one of the best romantic comedies ever. It is thoughtful, funny, entertaining, and Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan carry such a beautiful chemistry. I love the way the movie progresses in a way that you feel as though you're part of their journey. The ending wasn't rushed or far-fetched, but exactly the way it should play out. Doesn't matter your gender, age, ethnicity, or beliefs, this movie reminds you that we all have a desire for the kind of love and friendship that is unconditional, genuine, and enters our lives unexpectedly. Rob Reiner so eloquently intertwines them all.
Well, you better hope that ethnicity doesn't matter because there's not much representation on screen. I guess that is one thing to of note in this movie is not a lot of side characters that aren't just white New Yorkers.
It's true. I did notice that, like, I think, like, one of the only people of color is the waitress at the diner when they're on their road trip. Daniel Hennessy says 5 out of 5 stars. I am reduced to emotional rubble from laughter and tears from the opening to the closing. One of my favorite soundtracks as well, highlighting the standards in music by Harry Connick Jr. to include the signature It Had to Be You. One of my favorite movies of all time. I just watched it with my son for his first time in my 11th. Hard to keep track. Billy Crystal's constantly flowing, handcrafted, philosophical logic cracks me up every time he's on screen, and Meg Ryan is wonderfully strong and vulnerable and quirky as the perfect female friend. But of course, we know that men and women can never be friends.
Nope, not at all. I will say one of my best friends is a woman, so worked for us.
There you go. All right, Michael Underhill, 1 out of 5 stars. Had to get one. If you put to one side the irritating characters, the obnoxious Woody Allen overtones, and the unrealistic dialogue, this ode to relatively wealthy off middle-class people is totally unrelatable to anyone and worryingly not very funny. The dialogue is atrocious unless you are some sort of pretentious moron walking about Manhattan, thinking it's anything other than a rich person's playground that hasn't been gentrified to hell. Then it takes you out of the movie. No one talks about relationships like this, not now and not then. It's also worryingly sexist, and at times the film is utterly carried, though, by Billy Crystal as Meg Ryan couldn't act her way out of an interview with Michael Parkinson.
Oof.
The fake orgasm scene is overrated. This movie is overrated, and it just depressed me. It caters to one audience and one audience alone, people who live in places like the Upper East Side and people who want to live in these places. I think the classism hits more on the nose than the sexism in it. Pathetic film.
Is Michael Parkinson a nickname? Are they calling Michael J. Fox Michael Parkinson?
Oh, I don't know.
Are they taking a jab at Michael J. That person had an agenda.
I didn't even think of that. I don't know. I hope not. That's bad. All right. Well, this is the last one from Salma, who says 5 out of 5 stars. I failed my math test today and felt really bad about myself. Watching Harry Met Sally made me feel better and put a smile on my face. I really liked his sense of humor.
That one almost sounded like it should have been signed like Cassidy, 6 years old.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Yeah, When Harry Met Sally. I'll have what she's having has been, like, you know, just spoofed so many times over the years, too. Like, that's just one of those lines that it's, you know, I am your father. It's like, it's one of those that's in the top 100 of, like, most, you know, iconic lines of all time. And it really is. And to think that it was just kind of like an idea of Billy Crystal's that it needed a button. So he came up with one. Yeah, I like that. Yeah. This movie is still great. There's nothing else that I can really say about this movie. I still love it. It was funny. It was endearing. Watching it critically did not make a difference on this one. Usually that's something that really taints my view, and or can at least taint my view. And in this case, it was still a very enjoyable movie. I still love it. It's definitely one of the better of the chick flicks. Mm-hmm. And nothing that really screams out at me as doesn't hold up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Colin, When Harry Met Sally.
I'll say the only thing I can say, I'll have what you're having.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly.
If it wasn't for I'll have what she's having, I don't think we'd have That's What She Said. You know, like, yeah.
Yeah, Blaze.
They're cousins, you know?
What is it? I'll have what she's having walk so that That's What She Said could run.
That's right.
Yeah, no, I have nothing bad to say about this movie. I think it still holds up 100%. It is still, I think, the go-to rom-com. Like, when I think about, like, romantic comedies, they all have something. This is, like, the only one I can think about where I'm like, there's nothing wrong with it, despite what that one guy had to say. Like, it's not cheesy. It's still, like, very earnest, which is nice. It's, like, a very well-written. The dialogue is great. It's not, like, I don't know. Sometimes when you go, it's like action movies, I guess. Like if I think about, like, I used to really like Matthew McConaughey's rom-coms, like Failure to Launch, that. I still do. Or, like, How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Like, I like those movies.
Yeah.
But you watch them and you're like, oh, these are, like, cheesy. Like, cheesy, funny. Like, I like these more, like, romantic comedies where it's, like, the comedy is there, but it's got that understated quality that I think you only really get with, like, Billy Crystal in this role.
Yeah, there's the realism of just the situation. I mean, with Sleepless in Seattle last week, we did talk a lot about how we liked the naturalness of the dialogue and how it overlapped. And it's obviously a trait of Nora Ephron's writing that she likes doing the overlapping dialogue. And it's the same sort of thing you get here, is the very natural dialogue. The only one that's very choreographed is the four-way phone call. Yeah. You know? But it's beautiful to watch. It's very impressive to watch. But yeah, absolutely. This movie, it feels real, so it's that makes it a little bit more special in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great film. Everybody should watch it.
Great film. Everyone should watch it. Well, there we go. That's When Harry Met Sally, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out, well, just share our posts. Go over to our whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us as many stars as you can, and that would be great. Help drive us up some charts. Or if you want to go above and beyond and throw a couple bucks our way, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become an executive producer of the show, and then you get a shout out just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com. You can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com and let us know what movies you used to like, and then maybe you'll find us talking about them on the show.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Oh boy, Colin, Meguiary coming to an end. We're past the romantic part of the month, though. So, you know, we're going to stray a little bit from the traditional Meg's Ryan love story. But I'm pretty sure there is a love story in this next one. But this next one, Steven Spielberg classic. Or at least Steven Spielberg presents, maybe. I think it might just be produced by him. But Interspace. We're going to watch Interspace.
Oh, I literally have never heard of this movie before. I'm Googling a picture and it reminds me too much of Buckaroo Banzai for my liking, but, you know, we'll see what happens.
No, I promise you, it does not get that weird. We've got Martin Short, we've got Dennis Quaid, we've got Meg Ryan. So we've been talking for like 2 weeks now about how Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid were romantically involved for a long time. I'm not sure if they were together during this movie, but they made a few movies together, and this is one of them. So we've got comedy, we've got a little bit of sci-fi, but I don't think we have weird. I think we can, yeah, we can rule out weird. It's been a long time since I've seen it, though. So I'm excited, though. There is a love story, I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Right. Yeah. So Interspace, I can't wait. I've wanted to watch this since the beginning of this show. I've been so excited. Since the first 10 episodes. So there we go. Closing out Meguary next week. Until then, I'm Sean Wells.
Jack Quaid is Meg Ryan's son?
Yeah.
I'm Colin Stewart, everybody. It's blowing my mind.
And we'll see you next time for Interspace on I Used to Like This One. Yeah, Meg Ryan and Dennis Quaid.
Wow. I was just looking her up. Or just like, I was looking up Interspace or whatever, and I didn't even know she had kids, but...